Sunday's Chase Race number 2 at New Hampshire Motor Speedway created lots of stories for this evening's show, so stay tuned. The Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu starts now.
Like a NASCAR, ice like a superstar, up and down the boulevard. I get glutamine, man. You ain't fast like my 3-point shooter, man. 21's on 351 Cougar, man.
Welcome to week 2 of the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and Chase Race number two might now have been the most exciting race, but boy, did it bring out many stories to discuss. In this next hour, we're going to talk about Tony Stewart winning his second straight week. Boy, is this guy on a roll. We'll highlight a few Chase drivers and talk about their days. And also, tempers were running high at the Magic Mile. It makes for some exciting discussions, though. And don't miss out when we talk about restrictor plate racing. And of course, when my friend Alex comes into the booth to discuss how our polling turned out and move into this week's topic, which NASCAR driver has the prettiest wife or girlfriend? So let's get started. Chase Race number 2 took place at New Hampshire Motor Speedway in Loudoun, New Hampshire, otherwise known as the Monster Mile. This oval is just a little over 1 mile, and it has very little banking, making it a very flat track. When we have a flat track like this, track position is everything. It's a very hard passing track because there's not much room because it's only 1 mile, and without the banking, you can't shoot your cars off into the corners well enough to get ahead of the other driver, which makes for some tough passing. That's why it's always good to start up front, because those who start up front are usually ones that are there at the end. The race itself, called the Sylvania 300, was 300 laps for about 317 miles, with 19 lead changes among 15 drivers and 3 cautions. Ryan Newman was on the pole. In his third pole of the season, and it was his 49th of the career. Let me tell you guys one thing. If you're a NASCAR newbie, make sure Ryan Newman is always on your radar when it comes to being on the pole, which we discussed last week, is the first starting position at the start of the race. If you want someone to qualify your car, it's Ryan Newman. He's mad fast when it comes to qualifying, and he's always the one to beat. When you see him during the practice speeds, during the practice qualifying, if you look at the speeds chart and he's near the top 5, or even if he's number 1, you know he's going to be on the pole or very close to it. The race again for the second consecutive week came down to fuel mileage. Clint Bowyer was just leading with just 2 laps to go when he ran out of fuel, giving the lead once again to who I told you last week, Tony Stewart. Ladies and gentlemen, let me just say again, for the second straight week, I don't know how Tony does it. I don't know how he does it. When it comes to fuel mileage, he knows how to get the job done. He was able to conserve fuel, and he won the race, again, for the second straight week. Can you talk about momentum at the start of this chase? With only 8 more races to go, and he's won the first 2, he is always one on your radar. My question now comes down to, why are these races coming down to fuel mileage? I will tell you straight up, fuel mileages are not my favorite races. I like to see hardcore racing to the end if the best driver wins, not the best driver who can save amount of fuel. Yes, that does make a good driver if they know how to do every aspect of the race, including knowing how to conserve the fuel on time. But still, I like it when there's enough fuel to the end and we just go hardcore racing, last 10 laps to go, you're on your feet, you're shaking, which actually is me. If some of you guys who have seen me watching NASCAR race, I get a little crazy when it's 10 laps to go. You go shaking and you're just worried. And when it comes to NASCAR, I get all into it. And when it comes down to fuel mileage, that's not one thing I want to be on my toes about, because I just want to see some good finishes. My thought is that it's the new type of fuel that NASCAR switched to this year. Why is this? Because why are all these races coming down to fuel mileage? Yes, there are a few races each year where we know fuel mileage is going to be a factor. Michigan is probably the main one for that one. But still, two races in a row, something must be up. And that's why I go back to it's a new type of fuel that NASCAR has switched to. In previous years, they've just used the regular fuel, Sunoco fuel. But this year, they wanted to do something to change the environment because NASCAR is always under a lot of heat for saying that all the fumes that and all the engine fumes are affecting the affecting our environment. So this year, they decided to switch to corn ethanol fuel, which is characteristically better for the environment. Does it help the environment? Yes. Is that what we wanted? Yes. But one of the downsides is the fuel mileage. It has become significantly worse, and I think that is why it's come down to these past couple of races, down to fuel mileage. My question is this how the chase is going to be won, by strictly fuel mileage? Let's hope not. Moving on, I'm going to briefly talk about Jimmy Johnson's day. And yes, for all those who know that I love Jimmy Johnson, I'm not just mentioning him because I love him. I'm mentioning him because something is up. We give you guys... In the chase, you can have one bad day or one semi-poor finish that makes you lose position, and you can still recover to win the championship. Yes, last week, Jimmy did finish second, but still, I will tell you, he finished 10th, and which is still a good finish for last week. It wasn't good enough because he still lost two track positions. Positions in the chase, wow. And then this past week, he really needed to rebound. He was coming into Loudon. He was great in practice. But he needed some momentum to get a part of this chase fight once again since he was back in eighth in points. That didn't happen. Jimmy ended up finishing 18th, which happened to be the last car on the lead lap. Though he was a favorite during all the practices, I was watching the practices because I was thankfully able to go home this weekend and I was able to go on my DVR and like just watch the practices and just take some notes so I can have some things to talk about on the show tonight. And one of the main things, he was on the top of the speed charts. In the final practice, he was third. In the practice before that, he led. When you're up that high, everyone is like, especially when it's Jimmy Johnson, you are on everyone in that garage's mind. And that was the main thing coming into Sunday's race. Everyone was just like, watch out for that number 48. Watch out for that number 48. What happened? He was a favorite, but the race conditions were completely different when it came from practice to actual race day. Race conditions, what I mean by that, is the weather. The weather has so much impact on how a racetrack is going to actually form. What I mean by this is, if it's the cloudy weather creates more grip and makes it easier to drive, some might say. But when it's hot and sunny, it gets all slipping, sliding, and you're going all around, and it's just not something you really want to be a part of. So race conditions were, what I was saying, slipping and sliding because the sun was out, and that was completely different from what they had initially practiced for. Is this a bad thing? Well, yes, yes and no. Sundays during the race, you can adjust to make it much better. But in this case, Jimmy just was never able to do it. His crew chief, Chad Knaus, and everyone on that 48 car, they all tried the best to do whatever they could to get Jimmy a car that he needed, but it just didn't happen. He hung around the bottom half of the top 10 until pretty much the whole race, which I was going to be okay with. He was 7th, 8th, and 9th. But then it came into a little run-in with Kyle Busch. Now, Kyle Busch it's funny because he's the brother of Kurt Busch, which has been pretty much Jimmy's least favorite, we could say that. They've had many run-ins. But Kyle and him, they haven't really had that many run-ins every once in a while. But they had a little run-in because, you know, it's the last 40 laps, I believe, of the race. And, you know, tensions are high. People want to get up front. They want to win. And so they had a little run-in, and though it didn't take Jimmy out of the race, there was some body damage and affected the aerodynamics of the car, and that's what ended up ending his day pretty much. This is Jimmy's lowest he has ever been in chase standings in the history of the chase. The chase has been around for 8 years. Jimmy's been in the chase for 8 years. All those 8 years, his lowest ever was most likely it was 9th. So now he is 10th. This is the lowest it's been. He's currently 29 points behind the new chase leader, Tony Stewart. And next week, he needs to step it up if he thinks he can just defend his championship, because time is running out. But good thing we go to Dover, which is one of his best tracks. He's won there the past 3 out of 5 times we've gone there. So if anyone could rebound, we all know it would be Jimmy. Moving on, let's take a look at our chase standings after chase number 2 at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Like I said before, like 2 seconds ago, Tony Stewart is your new leader. With that win, he overtook Kevin Harvick for the lead, and now Kevin is back by 7 points. Brad Keselowski is now in third with a big jump of 3. Carl Edwards went back a spot to 4th, and rounding out the top 5 with the biggest jump of the day was Jeff Gordon, who is now in 5th. It was a jump of 5 positions, and this was because of Jeff's great performance on Sunday. He finished 4th, rounding out I didn't even give you guys the top 5 for the New Hampshire Motor Speedway race. Tony was the winner. Brad Keselowski, like I said, he jumped up 3 positions. Well, that will happen if you finish second. Brad is on a roll, like I've said last week as well. He's still one to look for. And 3rd was Greg Biffle. And 4th, what I just said, was Jeff Gordon. And the round out the top 5 was Brian Vickers, which is pretty good for him because he hasn't had the best season so far. And so that was the top 5 for the standings. Like I said, Jimmy's in 10th now in standings. Kyle Busch is 6th. Matt Kenseth is 7th. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is 8th. Kurt Busch had the biggest drop of 5 positions, is his 9th. And in 10th was Jimmy. 11th was Ryan Newman with a minus 4 positions. And rounding off the top 12 is Denny Hamlin, who is now 66 points behind with another poor finish. And with that finish, he is 66 points, and that's over 1 race of a distance. So we can pretty much mark Denny Hamlin out of this chase. After the break, we're going to talk about restrictor plate racing. For those NASCAR newbies, we're going to talk about what it is. And for those NASCAR vets, we're going to talk about the new changes NASCAR has implemented. You're watching listening to the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and we'll be right back.
Hear my thoughts in every note. Make me your radio and turn me up when you feel low. This melody was meant for you. Yeah, so right, sing along to my stereo.
You class heroes, baby. If I was just another dusty record on the shelf, would you blow me off and play me like everybody else? If I asked you to scratch my back, could you manage that? Like if we had chicken travi, I can handle that. Furthermore, I apologize for any skipping tracks. This is the last girl that played me, left a couple cracks. I used to, now I'm over that. Cause holding grudges over love is ancient artifacts. If I could only find a note to make you understand, I'd sing it softly in your ear and grab you by the hands. Keep me stuck inside your head like your favorite tune. And know my heart's a stereo, the only place for you. If I was an old school 50-pound boombox, would you hold me on your shoulder wherever you walk? Would you turn my volume up in front of the cops and crank it higher every time they told you to stop? And all I ask is that you don't get mad at me when you have to purchase Mad D batteries. Appreciate every mixtape your friends make. You never know, we come and go like on the interstate. I think I finally found a note to make you understand. If you can hit it, sing along and take me by the hands. Keep me stuck inside your head like your favorite tune. You know my heart's a stereo, the only place for you.
So listen close. Hear my thoughts in every note. Make me your radio. Turn me up when you feel low. This melody was meant for you. So sing along to my stereo. Oh, 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 oh
yo.
Welcome back to the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and Talladega Racing is coming up in the next few weeks, and you know what that means? Restrictor plate racing. For those newbies out there who may be asking, what is restrictor plate racing? Well, I'm here to tell you. Restrictor plate racing is racing with a restrictor plate,
of course,
which is a plate that is bolted between a carburetor and the engines that reduces the size of the holes that the air flows through the carburetor into the engine. It reduces the horsepower of the car, making them slower so the cars don't fly up on the stands and get out of control when racing on big, high bank tracks such as Talladega and Daytona. Restrictor plates can also be extremely dangerous because when speed is restricted, cars cannot drive away, and the only way you get around each other is if everyone runs in the big pack, or as we've recently taken part of the two-car tango, where two cars pushing each other nose to tail during the whole race is the only way to get ahead. One false move can cause the big one that can take out the whole entire field in one foul swoop. NASCAR tries to slow the cars down on one hand to improve fan safety, but on the other hand, they create more wrecks by forcing the drivers to run in packs altogether. My opinion on this restrictor plate racing is I am not a fan. Yes, I say I'm not a fan of a lot of things, fuel mileage, now restrictor plate racing, because I just like to see some good, hard, fun racing. But that is impossible when you go to a place like Talladega or Daytona because, like I said before, they're big. They're very big. And Alabama, the Talladega track is actually 2.6 miles. And it's okay if it was flat like that, but it has banking and it's very, very banked. And because it's so banked, they need to have these restrictor plates because say there was a wreck with all these banking, the cars could fly up and then that's when the fans get hurt. And so restrictor plates are in here for fan safety because we try to restrict the speeds as much as we can because without the restrictor plate, the speeds can go way into the 200 miles per hour, and that is just way too fast for this oval. So now that we understand what restrictor plate racing is, we can move on to the new news that NASCAR has announced. To different changes to this type of plate racing. And this is all starting at the Talladega race, which is October 23rd. We still got a little time, about a month, but, you know, it's coming up. It'll be here sooner than we know it. A larger restrictor plate opening and recalibrated pressure relief valves have been put in place for this race. And this, hopefully, if it works, it'll also go into Daytona in February. So we'll see how the changes go. Now, what do we mean by a larger restrictor plate opening? The restrictor plate is going to be 1/64th of an inch larger. Now, that seems like it's nothing. But with 1/64th of an inch, that increases speeds for about 8 miles per hour, which is between 6 and 8 miles per hour, which is pretty significant. So hopefully, given these changes, we can create for less of this packed or two-car tangos, as they like to call it, and create for some good racing and easier ways to pass. Now, I'm going to read off a couple of these quotes from different NASCAR drivers. I got two, Jamie and Ryan Newman, and what their views of it are. So, in response to the news, Jimmy Johnson stated in a news conference in New Hampshire this past weekend, "It's a step to make us pass more. I don't think we're going to be able to stay connected as long. Anytime you put a bigger plate on cars, it allows for larger closing rates with more opportunities to pass with more power." And that was the five-time defending champion, Jimmy Johnson. Ryan Newman, on the other hand, commented as well. He said that the biggest change of the two changes was the pop-off valve deal. He said, "Just trying to get the cars to not push as long basically is NASCAR's objective here. Whether they want it or the fans want it, I don't know. To me, that 8 pounds is a decent change, but the actual ambient weather conditions can be a bigger change from what the change actually was." What's the bottom line between this? Drivers like the direction NASCAR is going in. They're becoming more satisfied because if you've watched NASCAR and kind of kept up with it, you would know that people are, these drivers are not liking this current setup. So they are going in the right direction, and the NASCAR drivers do acknowledge that, and they do like it, but they still don't think it's enough. And it's not that they just want to have these high speeds and that's what they're begging for, because that is really not it. The bottom line is they just want this two-car tangos to stop, because it's not the easiest thing to go by, and it's actually much more dangerous than running in the pack, especially if it's in the middle of the race and you're midfield and you need a switch. Because what happens is if you go nose to tail, you need some you need to have some air going in through the nose to keep the car running and keep it from overheating. So that means that every once in a while, you're going to have to disconnect the two cars, and you have to do a little switch to give them each enough time to have enough so they won't overheat. And so doing this can be extremely dangerous, especially when you're in the middle of the pack with so many cars around, because one false move and you create the big one. And yes, that happens when you do the big pack racings, when there's like 9 in each row, or you're going 3 wide and so there's like 18 or even 27 on and on, but it's still not the best that you want to do, and two car tangos make it much worse. The larger restricted play opening will provide cars with about 7 to 10 additional horsepower, like I said, on this big 2.66 mile Alabama racetrack. And while the pressure in the cooling systems will be reduced about 8 pounds, like Ryan Newman commented on, per square inch, compared to the April event. Because we go to Talladega twice, so the April event, which was won by Jimmy, was what they were talking about more. And after that race, they were literally fed up with these two-car tangos. Theoretically, it would seem that changes will force drivers to break from the tandem draft effects still, but since the trailing car risks overheating if it doesn't switch positions or duck down to force air in the front of the grill, like we said before. And so we'll see what's going to happen. You know, I'm actually kind of curious to see how it's going to be different. I want to actually see if there's actually passing at Talladega. Do I think that's going to happen? Probably not. I've never once seen really passing on your own, because when you put those restrictor plates in, all the speeds are the same. There's no way you can get it. You can make your car as good as it gets, and you still cannot get around another driver unless you get a push. And that's what restrictor plate racing is. And there's nothing going to get a change until you take those restrictor plates out, which for fan safety, like we said before, is just not going to happen. Now, you might be asking, how did this two-car draft even occur? Well, this all happened because mainly that the Talladega and Daytona tracks have each been resurfaced and refigured in the last few months. And these refigurings created for a whole new style track, and it just really created this. And everyone was flabbergasted. When this happened, they were just like, what is this? Because in all the years of Talladega and Daytona racing, they had never seen something actually like this. And, you know, I was just as surprised. I was sitting there watching the race and being like, yes, it's kind of cool, because, you know, I kind of liked it, but I don't like restrictor plate racing, and I don't like that at all, like I said before. But it's kind of, if you watch it, it's kind of like a pretty thing. It's just two-car tango. You just see a bunch of two cars going around in circles, so it's like two cars becoming one for the whole entire race. And it's like going into pit road, and we're going to talk about what pit road is in a little bit. But when you go into pits, you actually have to go in with your tango partner. And it's really funny to watch how they create these partners. And it's usually around during the practice and qualifying. Most likely it will be one of your teammates. But sometimes, you know, you don't have a teammate. And so you just got to deal with what that is. And you got to find a whole new partner. And that's what people are forced to be doing. And so these when you do that, it was really cool to see this in April. I was watching one of the practices, and they showed Carla Edwards' car, and inside his car, they showed the dial, and they showed it on Jeff Gordon and Dale Jr.'s car, too. It has there's a dial inside, and this dial has a bunch of different numbers. It said 22, the 2, 99, 48, 88, etc., 24, 5, and these are all different car numbers, so it's different drivers. And so you turn the dial, and you can actually talk to them while you're driving. So it's talk to them over the radio and say, hey, you want to hook up and you want to be my partner? And because this is what happens, especially when big ones occur, this is when it's most popular. When the big one occurs and say it's you don't get out and you were safe enough to get around, but your partner wasn't, and now your partner's in the garage and you're sitting there like a lone duck, and you're just like, you're a sitting duck out there because you don't have a partner. So you turn that dial, that knob, and you just say, hey, want to hook up? And hopefully they say, yes, I need a partner. But sometimes they're turned down and say, you know, I already committed to this person that I have to stay with the remainder of the race. So I'm sorry about that. And then they just move on, and then they just move that knob and move on until they can find someone that they can hook up with. And also, it also helps when you just want to communicate. So the main, I'll just use this, Hendrick Motorsports, Jimmy Johnson and Dale Jr., and Mark Martin and Jeff Gordon. Those are the partners for them. So during the race, Jimmy and Dale talk to each other during the race, say, hey, are you ready to switch? Ready to get some air to your? You ready to lead us? And I'll do the pushing, you do the leading. And the same with Mark Martin and Jeff Gordon. Are you ready to do it? And so this is kind of just what happens during the race and during restricted plate racing. So after the break, we'll talk about what it takes to get in a good pit stop. And then Alex, our friend, is going to come on to the broadcast, and we'll discuss the poll results of last week's Who's the Naughtiest NASCAR Driver? And then we'll discuss this week's poll, Who's the Prettiest NASCAR Wife / Girlfriend? This is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back.
You know you got everybody looking. Got a little boom in my big truck. Gonna open up the doors and turn it up. Gonna stomp my boots in the Georgia mud. Gonna watch you make me fall in love. Get up on the hood of my daddy's tractor. Up on the toolbox, it don't matter. Down on the tailgate, girl, I can't wait to watch you do your thing. Shake it for the young bucks sitting in the honky tonks. For the rednecks rocking till the break of dawn. The DJ's spinning that country song. Come on, come on, come on. Shake it for the birds, shake it for the bees. Shake it for the catfish swimming down deep in the creek. For the crickets and the critters and the squirrels. Shake it to the moon, shake it for me, girl. Oh, country girl, shake it for me, girl. Shake it for me, girl. Shake it for me. Child. They got it in her blood to get a little wild. Ponytail and a pretty smile. Roping me in from a country mile. So come on over here and get in my arms. Spin me around this big old barn. Tangle me up like grandma's yarn. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shake it for the young bucks sitting in the honky tonks. For the rednecks rocking till the break of dawn. For the DJ spinning that country song. Come on, come on, come on. Shake it for the birds, shake it for the bees. Shake it for the catfish swimming down deep in the creek. For the crickets and the critters and the squirrels. Shake it to the moon, shake it for me, girl. Country girl, shake it for me, girl. Shake it for me, girl. Shake it for me. Country girl, shake it for me, girl. Shake it for me, girl. Shake it for me. Guitar!
and welcome back to the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and a pit stop is one of the most important factors of a NASCAR race. A pit stop can either make or break your day. You can end up in victory lane or end up in the back of the pack. So let's break down what a pit stop is. In motorsports of all kinds, a pit stop is where racing vehicles stops in the pits during a race for refueling, new tires, repairs, mechanical adjustments, or even a driver change. Now I'll expand on that a little bit more. So usually during the, if you look at a racetrack, there's going to be the full oval, or even on a couple road courses, there's going to be all the right and left turns. But then all of a sudden you're going to see in the pretty much the middle of the track or the sides of the track, either on the front stretch or the back stretch, or if it's a small track, it's just going to be all around. It's going to be just a different lane. And this lane is called the pit road. And this is where the cars go to get their cars serviced. Or if you're sick and you can't finish out the race, then you get a driver's change in. And this is where all that happens. Now, in the NASCAR, a pit stop, it will be about 13 seconds. Now, that is actually pretty fast. In the last few years, it's getting quicker and quicker and quicker. By next year, it's probably going to be 11 to 12 seconds. I literally do not know how these pit crews do this kind of stuff, because it is so difficult. You try changing a tire in like 2 seconds. And yes, they have those big power machines to make it do it much easier, but it's still really just hard to believe that they can change tires and put some gas in and make a bunch of adjustments within 13 seconds. Now, I'll expand on the 13 seconds kind of thing. 13 seconds is a good pit stop. It's good. 13.3, 13.4, 13.5, etc. Those are good. But when you get into like the 13.7, into the 14s, right when you're in the 14s, you're in a no-go. That's not good. Unless you are at Watkins Glen. If you have a 14 second pit stop at Watkins Glen, which some of you may know is a road course, it's a little bit different because you pit backwards than normal at Watkins Glen. What I mean by that is instead of coming in like the normal way, you come in and you drive through the right. So instead of making left turns the whole day, you make right. You go in as in like you're making right turns. And so it's a little bit difficult for the pit crew to be able to pit, to make all these adjustments on a place like Watkins Glen, because it is so difficult to just pit backwards. And so 14, 15 seconds are actually okay at that track. But in any other track, you want to stay in the 13-second range. Now, if you're in the about 12.5, 12.6, 12.7, those are amazing pit stops. If I see anyone with those kind of pit stops, they are on their marks that day, and they need some high fives, pat on the backs, I don't know. But they are doing it. They're doing their job well. People like Kyle Busch or Denny Hamlin, and they're both teammates on Joe Gibbs Racing, they have the best pit stops out there. Kyle Busch gets in the low 11 seconds. 11 seconds. Not even 12 seconds, but 11 seconds. And that is just crazy. And, you know, that's why they're always up front, because their crew is able to get them out of the pits in time and make him grab all these positions. And, you know, sometimes that is how the race is literally won. So in NASCAR, there are two tire carriers, two tire changers, a gas man, and a jack man. So in total, there's going to be six crew members jumping over the wall during each race. Now, this used to be different. Last year, this is actually new. It'll have only six. Last year, there were seven. They had something called the catch can man, who was with the gas can, with the gas man, and to catch pretty much all the remaining oils, etc., things like that, that the gas leaks. But this year, they have a new gas can that does that itself, and that it's able to disperse with all that. And so to all get the job done, there's different things you have to do. Yes, the tire carriers and changers, their main jobs are to carry the tires, change the tires. Jack man needs to jack the car up. Gas man, their main thing is to put gas in. But the most, so it's the tire changers and the gas man that stick directly with their jobs. But the tire carriers and the, sometimes even Jackman, they do a couple things. Tire carriers are the ones, because they just carry the tires, once they hand them off, roll the other tires back, they have a little extra time to make adjustments. Now, what adjustments are you talking about? Now, the most popular adjustments in NASCAR are the chassis adjustment, a wedge adjustment, track bar adjustment, and the air pressure adjustment. Now, what are these? That's what I'm here for. I'm here to explain to you what these kind of adjustments are, what make the cars better. A chassis adjustment has to deal with a combination of the car, well, chassis has to deal with the combination of the car's floorboard, interior, and roll cage. And when the hand in, and they go hand in hand with camber. Camber addresses the angle at which the tire makes contact with the track surface. Positive camber indicates the angle of the tire is tilted away from the vehicle's center line, while negative camber, on the other hand, indicates the tire is tilted towards the center line. A typical overtrack setup would have positive camber in the left front and negative camber in the right front to help the vehicle make better left-hand turns. So what a chassis adjustment does, it just tweaks the camber to make it so it's easier to turn and makes the car go around and make it as easy as it can for the driver to handle the car. Next is a wedge adjustment. Now, the wedge adjustment refers to the relationship from corner to corner from the weight of the race vehicle. Increasing the weight on any corner of the vehicle affects the weight of the three corners in direct proportions. Wedge adjustments are made by turning weight jack screws mounted on each corner with a ratchet. A typical adjustment for a loose car, which just means the back end, it's usually the back end which is loose, so when you make it a turn, the back end starts to kind of chase its way up the track instead of staying in the position to be able to make a good turn. And when it increases the weight of the left rear corner of the vehicle, which decreases the weight of the left front, and then the rear right rear corners increases the weight in the right front. A typical adjustment for a tight vehicle, which is when you can't turn it. It makes it very difficult to turn. A vehicle would be, so this is the adjustment you do for this in the wedge. It would be increase the weight in the right rear corner, and which decreases the weight in the right front and the left rear, and increases the weight in the left front. Yes, this sounds really confusing, like gibberish. But this is what... this is what it takes to make these NASCARs how they get. Another popular adjustment is the track bar adjustment, which is also referred to as a panhard. The track bar is also referred to as a panhard bar. This bar locates the vehicle's rear end housing to the left and right under it, or left and right wheels under it, and calibrating the vehicle's suspension geometry, raising or lowering the track bar, changes the rear roll center and determines how well it will travel through the corners. During races, this adjustment is done through the rear window using an extended ratchet. Typically, lowering the track bar will tighten the vehicle and raising the track bar will loosen it. Now, the track bar adjustment is the easiest to tell that a crew member is doing, because it's the right rear, there's these couple holes, and that's what a ratchet is. It's really hard to explain, but it's pretty just like a bar that is used to turn things. And so when you turn one way to loosen the car, you turn the other way to tighten it, and it goes into that holes, and that is how a track bar adjustment is done. And lastly, there's the air pressure adjustment. So with the advent of radical tires, with the stiffer sidewalls, changing air pressure in the tires is used as another setup tool that is akin to adjusting spring rates in the vehicle's suspension. An increase in air pressure raises the spring rate in the tire itself and changes the vehicle's handling characteristics. If his race vehicle was tight coming off a corner, a driver might request a slight air pressure increase in the right rear tire to loosen it up. So that was your garage talk for this edition of the track of Fastlane. I'm DJ Ray Ray, but before we go to break, we have a little bit of breaking news. Katie Kenseth, who is the wife of Matt Kenseth, who is the driver of the number 17 for Roush Fenway Racing, was at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and she left by a stretcher. Now let me explain this a little more. She was going to be a part of the Better Half Dash, which is just a, which is a charity race that is supposed to be, it's supposed to be on next month. And she was there for a practice session, and she crashed into a pit stop wall driving in a driving school Bandolero vehicle after taking a sharp turn. Matt Kenseth was there at the scene, and he rushed to check her, and the emergency track officials loaded her onto a stretcher. He took to his Twitter, which is what everyone goes on these days, just to let everyone know what had happened and to let her know her status. It turns out what he said is, Matt Kenseth tweeted, "But didn't turn out so well. Katie and I are home. She has a broken scapula and some bumps and bruises. Thank you for the well wishes." So everyone, please keep Katie Kenseth in your prayers as she recovers from her broken shoulder or scapula. And that is really hard to swallow. She's going out for this charity race, but it just shows. Now, this was not a regular NASCAR car, but it was a racing car. I mean, this just shows to you how dangerous racing can really be. One false move, one sharp turn, you can end up with some broken bones. So this is the Fast Lane with I'm DJ Ray Ray for radio.dominican.edu. We're going to take one more quick break, and when we get back, we're going to look at the poll results for who's the hottest NASCAR driver. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and I'm here with Alex, who is about to come on to let us know about how our poll went. Remember, listeners, last week we had a spontaneous little discussion on who's the hottest NASCAR driver, and now we told you we'd go out there and we start polling people, see who they thought. And here comes in Alex, and he's going to tell us the results.
Why, hello, fans.
Keep going.
Okay, all right, ladies and gentlemen, the polls from last week are, we have Casey Kane in the lead.
Well, of course. I mean, have you seen those eyes? I mean, that is like the most, we didn't even have to poll people to know that Casey Kane is going to be at number one. Those eyes, girls love pretty boys, and he, let me tell you, is a pretty boy, and that is why it works out so perfectly.
Yes, I mean, at first I didn't think he was all that, you know, good looking, but then the eyes just, you know, just made it happen. All right, in second place we have Trevor Bayne.
Again, we didn't need to poll the crowds to know that one. And bless, he's probably more attractive to people because he is only 20 years old. He has a girlfriend, but I mean, they're young. Who is 20 years old and thinks that they're going to marry the person that they're with when they're 20 years old?
People who get divorced.
True.
Yes.
So, Trevor Bayne, that's a good second place. Yeah, because, you know, he doesn't have the mature face of a Casey Kane, but trust me, he will surpass Casey Kane. Just give him a couple more years.
Doubtful. All right, and in third place we have Jimmy Johnson.
Woo! At least he got top five, right?
Yeah, sure.
That tells all those Jimmy Johnson haters, the ones who always tell me, oh, he's so ugly, proved you wrong. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Continue.
Okay. Then in fourth place we have Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Ooh, look at that cringe. Good looking. That's a solid place for him.
All right.
When he shaves and he's all freshly shaven, I mean, I think he looks pretty darn good. I mean, have you seen him in that Three Doors Down? I think it was Three Doors Down. Yeah, that Three Doors Down music video.
I have not.
Oh my. Okay, we are gonna be looking that one up because
I guess we are.
And The Road I'm On, he's in it with Tony Stewart. Puts Tony Stewart to shame.
Too all cute. Right. Well. Nice opinion.
I know. Thank you.
All right. And then in fifth, we have Carl Edwards.
Respectable. Me and my sister used to be in love with him. Like, she was all, my sister, really. She's just like, oh, I love Carl Edwards. She got so mad when they got married. I was actually pretty upset, too.
Yes,
but
I do.
Anyway,
agree.
He's pretty cute.
He's fun to look at.
He is very,
very fun to look at.
Have you seen him on the Men's Health? Oh, you got to look up that picture. You're just be in love.
And live. All right, let's speed this up because we have a very interesting topic to be discussing in the next 10 minutes. All right.
Okay, let's round out this top 10.
Okay, so in sixth place, we have Danny Hamlin.
That's respectable. People really don't think he's all that cute. I think I've always been in love with Danny Hamlin. Do I like his personality? No. Do I like his face? Not bad. Not bad.
Yes, well, I don't really have much of an opinion.
Alrighty, moving on.
All right, and then in seventh place, we have Martin
Truex Jr.
Truex Jr.
He's pretty cute. He has like this kind of like bad boy, kind of rough around the edges kind of look.
Ooh, I like it like that.
Everyone likes a bad boy. Pretty boys and bad boys.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, moving on.
All right, and then in eighth place, we have Greg Biffle. Yes, that's Greg Biffle.
What's he doing in there?
I have no idea, but his last name is Biffle.
Yes, it is Biffle, but what is he? Have you? I'm going to be nice, but he has braces. He's a 40-year-old with braces. How did he end up in the top 10?
Okay, braces? No thanks.
Moving
All
on.
All right, and then in ninth place, we have David Reagan. Reagan?
In ninth place? He's a cute kid. I mean, I would have expected him to be in the top five for sure. That surprises me. Greg Biffle got ahead of him?
I did this out of order. Okay, yes, apparently.
Alrighty then. That surprises me, but okay.
All right, and last in last place. Last place, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Vickers?
Nice pronunciation. Brian Vickers. Brian Vickers is a good round out to the top 10. Yes, he's not absolutely gorgeous, but he is pretty cute. But
you think everyone's cute.
Hey, what is that supposed to mean?
I'm just saying.
But I will tell you, but he looks kind of like a leprechaun. Like I always say, he looks like a little leprechaun.
Ooh, look at the Irish.
All right, moving on to our next poll for this next segment is who is the prettiest NASCAR driver? Which NASCAR driver has the prettiest girlfriend or wife? Now, we're not saying that you're the absolute prettiest. I think we're kind of changing this to make it fair because, you know, everyone's pretty in their own way. To who fits,
like, with one another, as in which NASCAR driver chose
the best face for his face.
Sure. Nice wording there, Ray.
Thanks, Alex.
All right. Well, first off, we have
Ingrid Vanderbosch, who is the wife of Jeff Gordon. She is gorgeous. And she's taller than him, but I think that it's cute. I mean, he's handsome. I'm surprised that Jeff Gordon didn't make it into that top 10 because he might be a little short, but he sure is handsome. I mean, for being 40.
I don't know about that. He's kind of got a square face. Anyway.
What's up with you and square faces?
What's up with you and not square faces?
I like square faces. I didn't say anything about that.
Yeah, but I don't like square faces.
Continue.
Okay. So basically we have Ingrid. Ingrid. Very interesting name. I feel like the man should definitely be taller in the relationship.
I think the same
but
thing.
But it's just like, you know, if it's about faces, then I think they're pretty cute together. You know,
they for fit. Those, yes, this is a radio show, so they can't actually see their faces. Ingrid is tall, beautiful, brunette, and wavy hair.
And Jeff is.
And everyone knows what Jeff Gordon looks
yes,
like.
Yes, pretty much.
Next up is Samantha Scarsinelli Bush. They just recently married Kyle Bush, which I would say Samantha is super pretty. Kyle Busch,
not so much. However,
if you think rats are pretty.
Oh, that is just harsh. All right, but
he's a great driver, though.
That's true. You know,
and that's what counts in the end, right? Personality and great driving skills.
Sure, if that's what puts you to sleep. yes, she is quite lovely looking. Although you may not be able to see her at this moment. I think that
that's why we're going to go out and poll it. We're going to find all you gentlemen out there ready to see some pretty people. I mean, everyone likes to see a picture of a pretty person. We're going to poll it. See who you guys think is prettiest. So yes. Watch out. That sounded dun, really dun, creepy. Dun, dun, dun. All okay. Right, we got to move along. Yes. Well, we only have 7 minutes
right.
to go.
Next, we have Carl Edwards. His wife, Kate Downey Edwards, is very pretty. She's tan, yeah, dark cool. hair, you know.
She has kind of these like googly like eyes, like
yeah, but they just
they're like a, but I guess they make her. So I mean, yeah. She's pretty.
And like he's and just so beautiful.
And he's beautiful, she's
like,
beautiful.
Like they just kind of like match each other.
Beautiful
you know
people
what I mean?
Always find each other. It's just what happens.
Yeah. Sometimes.
except for the case of Kyle Busch and Samantha Scarsinelli.
Okay. Yes, and let's just say she's kind of the perfect height for him, don't you think?
She's a doctor.
Okay. what does that have to do with her height?
I don't know, I just thought of it.
All right, well, a doctor and a NASCAR driver. I guess injuries will be fixed quite efficiently.
I guess so. Next up is Lynn Allmendinger. Now, if you guys could see AJ Allmendinger.
What? Never mind. Continue.
No, you can go ahead. You made a face. I want to hear this.
Just don't worry about it.
Now, Lynn Allmendinger, she's cute. She's really cute. They're all very young, and I think her face does fit with AJ Allmendinger, but AJ Allmendinger literally looks like a 16-year-old boy.
I feel like she could do better, personally.
So could Samantha Scarsinelli.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, like,
personality, right? In the end, it's all about the person.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we just had a little bit of a situation here in the studio.
It's all good. It's all good. Next up is Jimmy Johnson and his wife Chandra.
Yes, Jimmy Johnson and his wife Chandra. Yes, she's a very pale, a very blonde, very long hair, kind of wavy. I feel like they fit perfectly together, actually.
She used to be a model. I think, okay, so I've, all during high school, I was, as everyone knows, and I'm already, like, I'm obsessed with Jimmy. And in high school, I always just, like, defending her, like, no tomorrow. I was like, she's so pretty. She's only 30 years old. She's gorgeous. And everyone says she looks like 50. And I think it's because she's just so skinny.
Yes, that will do that to a person because it makes them look more like death because you can see the outlines of their bones.
Yes. Something we don't really want to see. But, you know, she did just have a baby just a year ago, and she gained some poundage. So I think that made her look a little better.
Some poundage.
Some poundage.
Very good.
All right. Who else do we got? We only got 4 minutes. We got to finish
the
this
last
up.
Last two here.
Yeah. Ashton. I don't really know her last name, but Ashton is the girlfriend of Trevor Bain. I told you, Trevor Bain's a little pretty boy, and he got himself a pretty girl.
I feel like he could do better.
Why? Because she has a square face?
Yes. She has a square face. Do you have a... No, she doesn't have a square face. Square jaw.
What makes a square face?
Okay, well, you can have a square forehead. No? Okay.
No.
All right. Well, moving on, I feel like he could do better. Anyway, last but not least, we have...
Christy Fittrell McMurray, the wife of Jamie McMurray, who is Alex's favorite. Now, don't get too excited and go all crazy like I just did when I get really heated in the moment.
Yes,
but
you do.
You know what? That just shows the passion in my heart. You know, that's what their situation was. I get a little heated. Anyway, so don't get a little too heated.
This is
Jamie McMurray.
What do
you think of Christy? They just got married. They had a kid back in December. Everyone is having kids these days.
Yeah, it seems to be the new trend.
The new trend.
Well, actually, I could see it, you know, them being okay together. I do enjoy the Jamie McMurray. However, I feel like he chose a very good person for himself.
You think he had a good choice? She's actually really pretty in person. When I met Jamie, she was there. Though she was a little stuck up, I will tell you that.
Oh, then I don't like her.
All right. Yep. Okay.
All right.
That was it. So, boys, gentlemen, men, dudes, guys, fill in the blank there. Watch out for us. Me and Alex are going to be coming around. DJ Ray Ray, Alex, that's who we are. Watch out for our little t-shirts we're making, The Fast Lane. If you see us with pictures, that means that we are coming for you. We want your opinion. Be alert. We want to know who you think is the prettiest. And then we'll come back here and we'll tell you the results. So that's pretty much concluding our show. I hope you guys all enjoyed it this time around. That was show number 2 in the books. This is The Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray. We'll see you guys next week.
Peace.
NASCAR, ice like a superstar, up and down the boulevard. I get cooler, man. You ain't fast like my 3-point shooter, man. 21's on 351 Cougar, man. I get stupid, dumb, diddy dumb. Ice King, baby, and I have plenty fun. I go 18, since I was 18. I get more change than from the 18 side shows. Ghost ride the whip. Hey, little mama, gon' shake them hips, gon' shake them hips. What it do? Riding glass packs, 24s on the shoes.
Face, NASCAR, 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 face.